You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, brought to you by RECO, your local guide for all things real estate investing in Colorado.
Hey everyone, welcome to our webinar on 2024 house hacking trends in Colorado. So our goal today is actually go through and tell you what's working and what's not working in house hacking in Denver and also in Colorado. Because one of the biggest questions we get is, does house hacking still make sense in today's market of high prices and high interest rates? So we will answer all of that today. Now, before we jump into it, I have to give you the standard disclaimer here. We are providing you educational materials. We are not your CPA. We're not your lawyer. We're not your financial advisor. We will be sharing numbers that we have sourced ourselves from deals we put together and using them as models. So please take all that with a grain of salt, but always go verify everything on your own and always go out there and talk with your team to fully understand all the decisions when it comes to, you know, buying a piece of property and also taking out a loan. All right, so we will jump into the webinar here in a second, but I want to introduce my co-host. So we got three co-hosts today, but only two are in the room at this moment.
Right.
Our third will be joining us here in a couple of minutes. But my co-host actually in the seat today is Troy Howe. Troy, how are you?
Good, Chris. How about yourself?
Doing great. So good. Troy is a lender, a local lender here in Denver with Nova Home Loans. We've done probably over 100 deals together now, I think.
Right. Yep.
And he's our go-to lender, helps out a lot of the house hackers, a lot of the investors. A couple deals we talk about today are from deals that he was the lender on. So our third co-host is Jeff White. He's our agent. He's an active house hacker. He's actually running a few minutes late from showing a property. So he'll be joining us in about 5 minutes and we'll reintroduce him then. But I always love to know before we get in the meat and potatoes of it, like if you guys are out there live and you got your keyboard, let us know what market you're in. I'm assuming most are in Denver, but tell us if you're Denver or somewhere else. And let us know if you're a brand new house hacker with zero properties or if you have one or more, because, you know, buying your first property is one part of it. And then scaling from one to two or two to many properties is a different way to go out there and scale it. So definitely let us know where you are in here so we can go through all the details. All right. So what we're going to cover today is we're going to talk about the trends in the market. Like I said, both what's working and what's not working. And we're actually going to go through three deals. And these are all real deals that either Jeff or Troy or both of them have closed together in about the last probably about 5 months in Denver, I'd say, Q4 and Q1 here. So a single family, a fourplex, and a duplex. We also got some updates on lending guidelines that we'll sprinkle throughout. We got one person looking to sell a property that's a house hack. Cool. We don't get that too often. We can definitely talk to you about that. And we won't go into details on that today. But after this webinar, I'd say we'll all connect and we can sit down and actually go through that. And if you've not checked out our Property Llama software, go check that out. We can help you run the numbers on there. All right, so let's jump into the summary here, Troy, of what's working in the market. So how's inventory?
Still low, but I think it's getting slightly better.
Yeah.
That's all report out year over year. There's a little more houses on the market. But
yep. And that's, I mean, what we're seeing here is just if you've seen the headlines, you know, the real estate market has been low inventory for quite a few years now. And even with the increase in interest rates, we've seen inventory tick up some, but it's still below historical averages. Right. So house hacking, we're seeing the same thing. We're still seeing a low supply of inventory of house hacks. But guess what? We're still out there finding deals and we're definitely finding a couple a month.
Yep.
Now, this should come as no surprise. No surprise. Cash flow is a lot harder in today's market. So what's happening, you know, prices, you know, just have been on a gangbuster for a while. They are still increasing, but they are, I'd say, below average appreciation, but they're still increasing slightly. Rates have gone up and stayed up, and taxes and insurance have gone up as well. So yeah, lot of expenses have gone up.
Yeah, especially on the insurance and taxes. I'm definitely seeing some shock.
Have you seen the insurance and tax component like change anyone's like buying ability or once they go under contract on property? Have there been any like,
well, usually,
not nice surprises?
Yeah, try to accommodate that and plan for that up front so that you're building in estimations and running your numbers off a little bit conservative numbers for your tax and insurance, just because we're in that funny time of year where the taxes all haven't been finalized. So you pull information off like Zillow or wherever you may see it, and it's not accurate.
Yes.
So getting a certificate eventually gets the exact number we're going to work with, but we don't have that up front. So doing good estimates. But to your point, those things have climbed a little bit. So it changes the dynamics on the loan side for sure.
It has.
And your house hack numbers.
Oh, yeah. It changes all of it.
Yeah.
And even if you go out there and pull a property off the MLS, you know, RE Colorado, Zillow, go tax cert is the official way, but yep. I also recommend if you're underwriting it, go to the county assessor's website too for a quick 90-second because this should come as no surprise, but the listing agent doesn't always put in the most accurate data.
Yeah. Does that ever happen? That's where you do your due diligence.
Yes.
Like your disclaimer up front.
So check it on there. And then here's a big question we get right now. Is it worth waiting for interest rates to drop, Troy? Yes or no?
No. Quick answer.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't wait. Make sure the house works and works with the numbers. They'll just get better down the road.
Yeah.
Get some better rates.
And, you know, the other thing I look at here is like we see nothing in the future that say, hey, prices are going to drop off or decline. Right. Or, hey, if we were to wait, hey, prices drop so much where it makes up for the difference. Prices are still like we just looked over year-over-year. Prices are up about 4 to 5% on average in Denver. I don't think it's worthwhile to wait.
No, I 100% agree. And I think Jeff would agree too.
All right. Look at this. We got Jeff White in the studio now.
Jeff White's in the house.
Yes.
My apologies.
Oh, you're good, man. So we're just going through the executive summary here and giving people that look on the market, Jeff. So catch your breath and jump in. So when rates drop, here's kind of the theory we have around, you know, in Denver and real estate in general. Once rates drop below 6%, demand will probably come back pretty strong, right?
Even more so.
Even more so?
Yeah. What we're getting now.
So another reason, hey, if you wait until rates drop, guess what? A lot of other people are as well. And like, I think there's a likely scenario that, hey, rates get below sub 6 and we'll kind of get back in a little more of a buying frenzy standpoint, which I think offsets any reasons for waiting.
Yeah. And then, of course, you might get in a bidding war and you're not going to get the seller concessions you might have gotten.
Yes.
And then, Troy, mortgage applications go up when rates first went below 7%?
Yeah.
Was it overnight?
Oh, they start to pick up within a week or two.
Yeah.
Yeah. As soon as the information starts to get out to people, then you start seeing applications increase.
And then I imagine if it went below 6, it would be even
more so. Yeah. Because there's people on the sidelines just waiting to jump in when they see that.
All right. So another key point on here is, you know, and a big allure to house hacking is people want to live for free. That is a great point, but not the biggest point. And so having high cash flow while you're living there, it's just really tough. Again, same things we talked about. Having cash flow is tough while you're living there. It's even tougher. So really focus on reducing your housing cost. If you get really creative, you can get some cash flow, but realize that, hey, just like it's hard to cash flow, it's harder to have strong cash flow. You live there as well.
Right.
All right. A question that popped up on here is, are rent prices moving in sync with mortgage or are they lagging behind what a mortgage payment would be? A little loaded question there. High level, though, rents are not keeping up with the mortgage increase payments.
Typically, they are playing to their own tune.
Yep.
So they're independent of each other. And it really takes a long time for the rents to kind of catch up to the interest rates. They'll pop up way quicker than the rents will come along.
And that's why, we're seeing a lot more creative strategies to go out there to make a difference in cash flow.
Correct.
We're going to go through some new lending options here in a minute. There's been really cool lending options that are really beneficial, especially to the multifamily side, which Troy, you'll talk to us in a minute. All right. And here's a punchline. The creative strategies are what works for cash flow in the market today. So going back to, I think it was Christoph's question in the chat there about rents keeping up. No, I mean, rents are slowly increasing. They have slowed down a lot. But if you want cash flow, you have to get creative. Mm. And those are the deals we're talking about today.
Yep.
All right. So, Jeff, what are the ways people are being creative and finding cash flow?
Yeah. So for house hackers specifically, you can't just do the business as usual COVID years with 3% mortgages where you could probably cash flow just living in a basement, renting out the upstairs because it was the mortgage. It was like almost free money.
Yeah.
Thank you, Fed, for giving us that unbelievable time period. But today, because they're more traditional rates, the historical rates today, like that is what it should be right around. You have to live with more, probably live with a roommate or two. If you really want a cash flow, you're going to have to probably do more than one strategy. You can't just rely on just doing, live in that basement, renting out the upstairs, doing Airbnb. You're going to have to live in the basement, do Airbnb, and rent out the rooms in the basement with you. And then maybe you might live for reduced costs, but probably not even cash flow.
Yep.
That's how much you have to just go to that extreme to be successful in the market like today. And then also the more rooms for the ones that do want a cash flow, you're just going to, the easy way to do it is buy a big single family house, live in the smallest room, rent out as many rooms as possible. So more rooms equals more money, more cash flow.
And we've had several people do that house hack, and it's worked great for them.
Yep.
Yeah. Your t-shirt there says cash flow of everything. You need more rooms equals more cash flow now.
Exactly. In Denver.
And so this, I mean, the same methodology we talked about for house hacking, like this is a get rich slow. You're not going to get rich overnight. Hey, buy property, do your house hack stack, buy property next year, buy property next year. Punchline is it still works. It's just going to be a little bit less cash flow and you have to be more uncomfortable than you had to used to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess the way, going back to the Christoph's question about like, do rents follow mortgage payments? The answer is definitely no. They're independent of each other, but rents follow inflation. So that makes a huge difference because rents, if you own an asset like real estate asset, rents will go up historically. And if inflation skyrockets, rents usually follow that. So owning in real estate is a great financial decision, even though it is harder today. But if you can make it work for your goals over time, it's a get rich slow technique. That's what really it is. And then house hacking is a faster way of doing it versus traditional buy and hold. And that's why we're here today.
Yep. Yes. Punchline is it still works. All right. So what is not working, guys?
Yeah. So I could talk on this is some of my clients that just want to buy a duplex and just rent out to market tenants. You know, unless you're putting 50% down, you're likely to, like, your best case scenario is you'll be a negative cash flowing property or alligator type property. And that's, you don't ever want to buy a negative cash flowing property because Mr. Mortgage Company over here will come for you if you can't pay that mortgage. Like the first thing that pops up.
Well, as long as you have good income to cover the difference.
Exactly. But if you're going to put 20, 30, 40% down and you're paying money every month to own it, it's like, what's the point of investing in real estate when you get 5% at the bank?
Yeah, exactly.
And then if you're trying to cash flow, like, of course, we all want to live in the popular neighborhoods and, you know, near parks and bars and restaurants, but those are usually the worst investments because the rents don't make up for the premium location.
Yep.
So you have to kind of go.
But the prices of the houses do.
Yes. Yeah. You have to pay a premium to live there.
But the rents, but not a premium on the rents.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And the rents actually compared to if you look at locations right surrounding those popular neighborhoods, the rents are fairly close relative to the price point. The further you go out, the rents obviously go down, but if you get close, you're on the outskirts of those popular spots, the rents are fairly close to living in those popular
spots. That's kind of the sweet spot.
Yeah.
Yep.
This is something that was very interesting to me when I first got into real estate investing is people will pay a lot more to own and live somewhere, but renters usually will not pay a lot more to live in a certain location. So excellent that price point. Premium comes from, hey, I want to own there because I want to own the property and live there or have my kids go to school there.
Yeah. Yep.
So let's jump into the deals here because we got the trends here. It works. Things are tougher, but the easy days of low money down, long-term rental cash flow, those are over. And now we're going to go for our creative deal number one, which is a single family rent by the room house hack strategy.
Yes.
So Jeff, tee us up for us here.
Yep.
I see a great looking property. Looks like typical house in Denver we see.
Yeah, right over in Westminster. So about 15 minutes from northwest of downtown Denver. And just a basic ranch style home, five bed, two bath when he bought it for $520,000. So something that was on the market for over 20 days back then. And if you look at that interest rate, it's like that investor was looked at it differently. He knew with the higher interest rate, it was going to be harder. And how did he solve that problem? It's like, can I add bedrooms? Can I add bathrooms? And this house is so big because it had a huge basement. It was possible to convert this 5-bed, 2-bath to an 8-bed, 3-bath. And we'll go through the numbers on how that changes is from a below average deal to a above average deal.
Yes. And how much did it cost to do the improvements?
So for adding 3 bedrooms and a bathroom, total cost was about, oh, and this is the other part, which we could go into as well, covered by the seller. Total cost to do all that was about $20K.
Okay.
And we'll talk about how the seller covered a good chunk of that.
Yeah. And walk us through, Troy, I'm looking at you, walk us through the type of lending on here and the loan, because there's a lot of numbers on here and there's some unique aspects that this house hacker used.
Yeah. Specifically with this one, it has the down payment assistance second mortgage that kicks in. So that $20,423 that you see there. So when you have that, your financing is a little more than the purchase price, but the cash needed is minimized. And like Jeff was pointing out, you've got very nice seller credits kicking in.
Yes.
Which we couldn't utilize all that towards the closing costs because the closing costs were pretty much covered to a large degree, down payment and closing costs. So a portion of that was spun off into doing the improvements, which worked out awesome. So I think his net cash was $3,000 into the deal, but then he had $12,000 to work with for the improvements.
Yeah. So that's what's cool, Chris, is $12,000 of that $20,000. And he did a little nicer bathroom, so he could probably save a few $1,000 there. But $12,000 of the $20,000 was given to him, a check at closing for all those improvements. So the seller paid for all his renovations that were not even, it's a beautiful house. It was immaculate condition. It was move-in ready, repainted, new flooring, new appliances, it was ready to go. Like it didn't need
even the basement was nice.
Yeah, the basement was ready to go. And because of the market conditions during that time, the rates were over 7% and a slower time of year, we were able to negotiate that end and have the seller pay for all those improvements and working with a lender like Troy.
Yeah.
He understands how to structure it where some lenders would not be able to deal with having seller paid improvements at closing.
Right.
Yeah. Because some lenders are like, no, I can't deal with that after closing because the improvements aren't done before. So that's the difference maker with Troy.
Yeah. Appreciate that. Then another piece of the puzzle for this one too is that the rate is a little bit elevated because of the assistance program.
Yeah.
So, you're a little heavy on the rate and the payment, but you're minimizing the cash. So you're trading off. That's the compromise.
Yeah.
But he liked the compromise and his return on investment's huge.
Yeah.
Right. When you look at the cash into the deal and then him doing rent by room, he's going to do stellar with this property.
Yes.
So punchline here is for all in for closing costs and the renovation costs, this buyer was out of pocket for about $9,000. So let that sink in. And then there are also some creative lending packaging to get like this down payment assistance program, which helps to lower the down payment as well. All right. But Jeff, walk us through the numbers on here. I know we have a lot on here, but just give us the high level because a lot of people, they're not familiar with room by room.
Yeah. So the just high level rent by room, you're looking at between $750 to $850 for a room that shares a bathroom, depending on if standard 10 by 12 room, box room, shares a bathroom, no thrills, no excitement, just a basic room that you're targeting the affordable housing part of the market. But if you have a private bathroom, then you got $900 to $1,000 a month, depending on, again, if the room is like 20 by 20 versus a 10 by 12 room with a private bathroom. So these numbers, these are actual numbers, and he was getting these. So the basement rooms, some were bigger, some were smaller. So between $725 and $800, rented out the garage $100 a month.
I like the garage
room. Yeah, right.
$100.
And then
might as well squeeze.
Sometimes you could squeeze a little bit more. So you got $850 for the rooms because it's a nice place and all the rooms are really nice. And the room with private bath $900. So you could see this. It's always great to look at house hack deals two ways. After moving out, making sure you cash flow, and then while you're living there, to make sure it reduces or eliminates your housing costs. So after moving out, this thing, even at the 7.625 rate, it's cash flowing $1,500 a month. And what was his total out of pocket?
$9,000.
Yeah. So he's going to, what kind of ROI, Chris?
Is that's like a 200% cash on cash return, right?
Yeah. Now you, not 18,000
by nine. Yeah. Not the other stuff. That's just on cash on cash.
Just purely cash on cash.
Yeah. That is nutty.
And he took, so if it was a 5.2, take away three rooms out of this, and now it's no longer, it's like,
that was the difference maker.
Yeah. That's how he made this from deal, no deal to deal.
So this is for once he's moving out here. Yes. And this is a big, what we are fans of is the best way to look at the property is buying it as a future rental property. Look at that first, then second, look at what's going to do to save your housing costs. Because what makes you rich? Saving money on your monthly rent or building assets, multiple assets of cash flow. Having multiple assets. Right. So I like how you did this. We looked through it first. Strong cash flow with room by room. So while this client's living in there, he is going to take one of the bedrooms,
Yeah.
All right. So take out one of the bedrooms and you're showing the gross rent drops from $6,500 a month down to $5,750. All the other expenses, the mortgage payments, all that stays the same.
Yep.
And now his net positive cash flow drops from about $1,500 to about $765 a month.
Yeah.
So living there, but also still cash flowing.
Yeah. Yeah. Seven roommates. But the difference is he knew in this market, he knew the higher interest rate environment that you couldn't do business as usual of 2021, 2022, where you could just take the basement, rent out the upstairs and probably get the same cash flow. He knew it had to be a 1-year commitment. But he's willing to do that because $765 per month is worth it to deal with all those roommates, because living for free, cash flowing, self-managing, learning how to deal with tenant conflict, all these great soft skills that he'll be able to apply because it is a future rental property. Yep. And like now he gets to get paid to live there. He gets paid. I mean, how many W-2 jobs can you get? What is 800 times 12, a $10,000 gross income or net income raise for any W-2. Mm-hmm. And that's what he just gave himself, basically, by living with seven roommates.
I like the way you looked at it. And this goes back to what we talked about in the opening part with the trends of, hey, he's getting cash while living there because he is uncomfortable. Yeah. I mean, hey, it's no one's dream to live with seven roommates. Yeah. Or at least it's not my dream. But you do it and you can maximize cash flow like this.
Absolutely.
So awesome job.
Your kids and wife, though. Yeah. So you've got some roommates.
I haven't got any rent checks from them yet.
No, that's the problem.
So
we need to work on that.
Yes. Get my 4-year-old paying rent, right?
They got to earn their keep, right?
All right. Some point. So we got a couple of screenshots here from Property Llama, which is a software we use to help analyze properties. And then we're not going through all the numbers on here, but you guys can download the slide deck if you want to. But look at what this emoji is pointing to. We're showing that 3% down payment is getting an incredibly, incredibly high return on us, like 300%. Yeah. So put $9,000 in, and then, hey, we're going to assume the property appreciates 3-4% this next year. We take the cash flow. We take some of the debt pay down. We take some of the tax benefits. Mm-hmm. And 300% estimated return on your money. Whoa.
Yeah, that's why house hacking is so powerful. It's like
this is almost better than Bitcoin, man.
All right.
What is that? $75,000?
I'll still buy a house over Bitcoin. No, but this is like what this really highlights here is the getting creative, but also just the power of leverage. There was a question earlier about someone saying, hey, when you're talking about house hacking, does ever get to a point where it does not work? And so far between the last market cycle, this market cycle, and other times we run models, I have not seen a market condition that we forecast where it does not work. Now, I think where it doesn't work is, hey, if we expect prices and rents to drop, well, real estate investing in general doesn't work in that market conditions. But it's such a big reason house hacking works across all market cycles is because the high leverage you get. And what you have to focus on, not just cash flow, but hey, how hard is that money working for me? Now, when I have a highly leveraged piece of real estate like this, my dollar or my $9,000 in the property, it is working so hard for me. Hmm. And that's why we're seeing a 300% ROI.
And I can expand on that too. So please. I would almost say recessions and negative financial events like that would actually make house hacking even better. Because what happens to people living in those one bedrooms and studios right now? Lose their jobs, or
they can't afford the luxury of living by themselves anymore.
Where do they go?
They get roommate.
Yes. So now your demand, now your supply of roommate tenants, so like rent by room is a more powerful strategy at that point, because now your demand skyrockets in a recession environment and they're still working. Like, what's great about the gig economy is people, even if they lose their job tomorrow, they could do Uber Eats and side jobs to come up with $800 a month. It's really an amazing affordable housing type of strategy that could cover spreading out your risk, not just renting a house to one tenant. You're renting a house to like seven tenants, six tenants, eight tenants. And now you have eight incomes, seven incomes covering that mortgage, not just one person or a family. And same thing with families. How many people, if you have one to rent out to a market tenant, what happens to family tenants where they live in a B-class area? Where do they go? Most people don't go from, everyone wants to live in the A and B neighborhoods, but if the B person loses their job, they go down to C.
Yep.
And a majority of rental properties are going to be in the C areas because those are the ones that cash flow the most. So again, same thing as the rent by room, your demand actually goes up, recession environment. So I would say owning rental properties is even better. If you could hold it, of course, right? You still have to perform and execute the business plan, but you'll have more tenants to choose from. So now it's just picking and choosing the best ones that will survive this recession or negative event going on.
That is a great point.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. So this wraps up deal number one. Single family residents go out there and do a room by room rental. And I know we close on a lot of properties like this, and this is, a great example. Hey, go in there, buy a house for reasonable budget, and go add a couple bedrooms, maybe a bathroom. So if you guys want properties like this, reach out to us. We're happy to help you figure out the strategy and then go find this and execute this. Now, before we move into discussing the multifamily, the fourplex house hack deal we talk about, we got to take a little time out and talk about some updates on lending guidelines, because last year, some new guidelines came down, which totally changed the game for getting multifamilies. Troy, what's going on?
The big news was Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac coming alongside VA and FHA with the minimum down, 5% down owner-occ. Owner-occupied financing. So that really opens up the doors because a lot of times the FHA wasn't attractive. They had, the self-sufficiency test, and it was kind of curtailing what the borrower would come up with. In fact, you did one.
Yep.
In your past.
And, 2017.
And you had to put like 7% down.
Yes, even back then.
So the conventional 5% would have been a better deal.
Yeah.
Maybe slightly higher interest rate, but with your excellent credit and credit scores, you probably would have had cheaper mortgage insurance than the FHA on a monthly basis. So it's opened up the doors. Yeah. And so we've had a lot of good house hacking clients that have taken advantage of that. Got one we're working on right now, closing next week, and closed a fourplex about a month and a half ago. Mm-hmm.
I want to understand, like, this is such a game changer out there, because the two ways before were VA, which means, hey, if you're a veteran, if you didn't serve in the military, you're not getting the VA,
right?
Unless you're, married to a veteran is your spouse. Mm-hmm. Or secondly, the FHA, and Troy alluded to the self-sufficiency test rule. We won't go into the details of that, but since like 2018, 2019, basically, like, unless you put down 15 or 20%, you couldn't get that type of loan. Well, if you're putting down 20%, you're not house hacking. Right. Like, go put down 3% or 5%. Right. So this 5% down really opened up to a much wider audience, and also a bigger, a lot more properties as well.
Absolutely.
So if you guys want all the details, there are obviously nuances on here. Whether we're talking about the 5% down loan for multifamily and that room by room we talked about, a down payment assistance program, this is where you want to go out there and talk to an expert lender like Troy Howell. So two things always look for: someone that's local. We've had the best success with working with local lenders, and Troy is local here, and someone else that actually really knows the investor market, which Troy does. But the reason we refer so much to Troy is because, hey, he's good at lending, he knows his stuff, but also he really takes the approach of building a business plan with clients. Like, a lot of our clients love how Jeff, you and I will sit down and come up with like a strategy to buy real estate. Hey, here's what you can do. Well, we're one half of the coin. Troy's the money guy. Troy's gonna come back with the other side of the money, help you out there. And he's not like, oh yeah, you're approved, go do this. He sits down, hey, what are your goals? What's your income? Let's pull your credit score. They've got some proprietary stuff to do at Nova as well, where he can basically help you put together a real business plan, the lending side, to make sure that you can get your first property, but also set you up for success for 2, 3, and 4. So if you want Absolutely. That hands-on relationship approach, give Troy Howe.
Please do. Yep.
Give Troy Howe. Give Troy give Troy Howe a call.
Yes,
and say howdy to Howe. There we go. That was smooth, wasn't it?
I like it.
Yeah. Mm. All right, go on the property two here. Let's talk about this 4-unit multifamily. Troy, I know you did the loan. Jeff, you were the agent. So yep. Talk us through it, man.
Yeah, so the client was basically a couple that wanted to get started house hacking. They are open to all the variations of it, house with mother-in-law, basically small multifamily, and even doing rent by room if it made sense. But when I digged a little deeper to the real goals, they're like, nah, we don't want to live with roommates. We don't live in a basement. We don't want to live in a garage or a converted studio. We want our own specific unit because they were living in a townhome prior and they want something similar. So when the new-
You mean they wanted privacy?
I don't know what that is. I know you use those words.
That's funny.
So when the new Fannie Mae rule changed from, 5% down payment, it just opened up a lot more doors. They weren't even looking to buy in 2023. They're looking to buy actually in second quarter 2024
because they were. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, they weren't. Yeah. So their timeline moved way up because of that new change and like. And then discussing like, hey, when's the best time to get the best deal?
Fourth quarter. It was now.
Yeah.
And that was the story. And they did.
Yeah. And they found a sweet fourplex in Arvada. It was 5% down, $800,000. 2-bed, 1-bath each unit and value add potential. So all below market rents. And you can see here is more of the details. 2-bed, 1-bath, 950 square feet per unit. So really good size.
Those are pretty big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that didn't feel small. And they're all, dated, what you would expect for most small multifamilies. They're rentals their whole lives. So usually a small multis, you're not going to see them updated. Usually they're going to be more dated look, which is fine. Because their strategy going in was, we'll live in one. And all the other units were month to month. So they had the flexibility of not being stuck with these below market rents forever. Or like sometimes you see landlords right before they sell, they renew all the tenants. And then you're stuck with these leases. Mm-hmm. This landlord on this particular one, we got the best one of all the ones over there because it had all month to month. So they had the most flexibility to really time it and work the business plan of moving in one, fixing up theirs, and then working with one at a time so they don't have like three vacancies at once. So that's what they did. They moved into one, used the 5% down conventional loan product, bought it for 810, and they chose 810 because they wanted a 10K seller credit because we knew it appraised for higher than that, mm-hmm. and it did appraise. So they got the full 10K seller credit to buy down the rate a little bit because rates were still hovering between 6 and 7% back then. Mm-hmm. And yeah, location was...
Before you move on to location,
yeah,
because I know we've all been around the block a few times when it comes to properties and doing stuff. So Troy, if I go out there and get a seller concession of $10,000, that means I get $10,000 more at the closing table, which is, hey, basically I don't have to wire in $10,000 from a bank account.
Correct.
Now, if they did not raise the price from $800 to $810, they would have brought the $10,000, but by putting $10,000 more onto the mortgage, what's that do to their monthly payment?
About $60.
About $60 a month.
Rule of thumb that I tell everybody, every $5,000 in loan amount, it's about $32 with the current interest rates we have in monthly payment. So they skinnied it up by $10,000 and the payment kind of bumped up maybe $64. But $10,000 in the bank that they would have had to put into it and then have a little more of a payment made sense.
So yeah, think about that because Jeff is out here, he's great at getting value add properties and that takes some cash up front. And we always want to minimize cash down. And then I see so many people, they don't realize the power of seller concessions. Hey, would you rather have $10,000 now or save $60 a month? I usually go for $10,000 now. $60 a month.
I have a lot of clients.
Whatever. So that's the difference there. Anyway, location.
Location's fantastic, right? Within 5 minutes of Old Town, Nevada. And right close to all the highways. And like I said, brick building, solid structure. New roof was put on right before closing. Just ready to go. Solid multifamily. And all it needed was really a refresher, like paint, flooring, baseboards, painting cabinets, nothing, new appliances, nothing like.
So this is the easy specs of the value add.
Yeah, the value add you want, like just one that's a tired looking property just needs a refresher, you know? Yeah. A lot of the work that they could do, like the husband, both of them were semi-handy, you know, they had know how to use hammers and tools and something that I didn't know how to use.
Did he show us the picture of the pickup truck with the carpet hanging out the back?
Yeah.
That he got?
Yeah.
Like, good deal.
Creativity. Excited. Yeah. You know? I mean, he was excited to get into one that was a fixer-upper, not a move-in ready one. That's so this worked out well for that couple.
Yep. All right. So the numbers. What's the look while they're living there and they have the luxury of privacy? They're in unit A and they got units B, C, and D rented out.
Yes. So let me start here. So they were living in a townhome, no roommates, not any house hacking, just a nice townhome near Belmar, which is in Lakewood, Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Great spot. And they were paying about $2,200 a month to live there for a 3-bed, 2-bath place. So they weren't house hacking. They were kind of like, think of it as that was their housing cost.
And they're paying $2,200 a month in rent.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Or the mortgage payment.
Or the mortgage.
Yeah. So they're paying that. So that's what they're used to. So their goal initially was like, hey, we understand we got to deal with these below market tenants. And yeah, the price is high. And, you know, with the mortgage and dealing with these below market tenants, it's going to take a little bit of time to get to break even. But as long as we're near what we're paying for our mortgage right now at the townhome, we're fine with that because it's not really much of a change. They're both working two W-2 jobs. So it's not like they're quitting their jobs and doing this full time. So they can handle negative cash flowing for the time period it takes to transition the below market tenants out to the Section 8 tenant that they're replacing them with. And this is a great example on this. While living there, until they replace that first tenant, they're fine paying the $2,400 a month after everything.
All right. So that's covering their living expenses and also covering the lower paying leases till they turn them.
Correct.
All right. So, and then what about, how long will it take them to turn over the units to get new market tenants in there?
I would say about 6 months.
6 months.
Yeah.
Okay.
For everything. Yeah. To work. Because they're trying to stage it out where they're not trying to do one a month. They're trying to, because all leases are month to month. Yes. But they want to kind of do one every couple months.
And to stagger the leases as well.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, this is after moving out. So within 1 year.
Yes.
You know, most people move after 1 year per lending guidelines. Within 1 year, they have updated all three units, gotten the market rent, and they moved out.
Mm-hmm.
What's that do to cash flow?
Are
we missing a negative sign there now?
No, that's legit.
It went away.
Yeah. No, it's amazing because Section 8 pays above market rents. The reason why Section 8 does that is because they know people don't like to rent to Section 8. So they want to pay more than market.
Incentivize.
And incentivize landlords to accept tenants into the program. And their strategy with this is to get 4 Section 8 tenants at $2,200 per unit. So $8,800 total. And with paying that mortgage, that 5% down mortgage and taxes, insurance, maintenance, utilities, vacancies, estimation, cash flowing $2,200 a month. And then going back to, what was their down payment, Troy, on this guy?
That was 5% down.
Yeah.
And then we had the $10,000 credit towards cost.
Yeah.
And then once the seller kicked in like the deposits and everything that for the units, he ended up, I mean, it was in the 30,000s.
Yeah.
Now some of that money he's got to keep aside in an escrow account for the deposits for the renters that are there. But it was awesome.
I mean,
it was pretty skinny for him.
Yeah. So you can see 1 year from
less
now,
than 40 grand.
He'll be cash flowing over $2,000 a month from their first true investment property at a 7.5 rate, something like that.
6.875 off the top of my head.
Almost 7% owner occupied, 5% down, highly leveraged, cash flowing after moving out.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Just by thinking of it as finding the best strategy that fits that property.
Yeah. Yeah. And go back to this, like, so two themes you'll notice here is, you know, hey, what can the property handle? And also, what does the investor want? That first investor was, hey, I'm happy having seven roommates to maximize cash flow. This investor, which actually was a couple, and generally couples want more privacy. They're like, hey, we value our privacy and, you know, we'll give up some cash flow so we have our privacy. There's no right or wrong. It's just, hey, what does a property fit? What do you want? And what works for your budget? And these are two great win-win scenarios.
And something I like to throw in that we don't always think about is a good chunk of that payment, of course, is going to principal reduction, right? And the overall analysis that comes into play. But when you look at that, it's like, yeah, cash flow, but there's some of it going like into a savings account. It's building, helping you build that equity.
And the tenants are paying for your building the mortgage equity. Payment.
So even when it was a bit of a negative number, really wasn't as negative as what you may think because there was some principal reduction going on on a monthly basis.
And it looks like in year one, I think it's estimating about $8,200 in principal reduction.
Yeah.
If I'm reading that right. So yeah, exactly. Like there's the especially since cash flow is tougher.
Yeah.
Really appreciate all four ways you can money in real estate. Yeah. Cash flow.
They're all
and appreciation and debt pay down and the tax benefits.
Yep.
All right. So before we go into the third property here, if you guys want to figure out the best way to go out there and find a house hack or make a move, please reach out to me. Please reach out to Jeff. Let's sit down and help you do a investment strategy consultation. We love doing them. So there's a QR code there. You can also email us or text or whatever. But we are happy to hop on a phone call, grab a cup of coffee and help you go out there and figure out what your plan is. Now, for house hacking, it is so important to have that plan in place because you're not just buying one property. We're looking at, hey, how can we buy two, three, and four? So let's make sure the strategy on our side works, and let's make sure the lending on Troy's side works as well. So if you want a business plan, scan the QR code or reach out to us. All right. Excuse me. So, Jeff, property number three. So we have a value-add duplex using the new 5% down conventional lending program. So this give us the details.
This one's one that combines both the first deal and the second deal.
Oh, okay.
So it's a little bit of both.
They got together and had some kids. Yeah. Huh?
And also a couple, actually. So they wanted to use, you know, they were looking for something to start, 24-year-old looking to start house hacking to 24-year-olds, and they already, you know, barely out of college, right? They're used to living with roommates. They live in together right now in Capitol Hill for $3,200 a month. So they're paying extremely high rent to live over there. So their goal was basically just to get started. They understood to get started, they're going to have to sacrifice a little privacy. So they're at the younger age where living with roommates isn't as big a deal as someone like the couple, the four-unit one where they were living together for multiple years. They haven't lived with roommates in probably 8+ years. This couple is barely out of college. So they were ready to go, and they wanted to buy a multifamily, utilize this program again because it was 5% down conventional, and they could buy up to a four-unit. And this is where the duplex popped up because it was one that checked the boxes, and we'll go into the details in the next couple slides. So it was over in Aurora, in the southeast quadrant. So for the listeners out there, like nearest to the tech center over there, probably about 5 minutes from Denver Tech Center.
Okay.
10 minutes. And it was 3-bed, 2-bath on each side. But here's the special thing about it. Built 1980, and it was garden level in the basement. And the upstairs, the way it was laid out, it had a dining room. And those are my favorite places that people don't use because no families eat together anymore in dining rooms. So you convert those over to bedrooms really easy. Maybe your families do. You guys use the dining room.
On Thanksgiving, we do.
Once a year. So those are like the low-hanging fruit of value add. How do you turn a 3-bedroom to a 4-bedroom when there is a square footage? You take that dining room, add a couple walls, a closet, a door, a light switch. There you go. You got used out of that 4th bedroom. And that was possible in this deal because of the square footage was big enough footprint to add that extra bedroom to make it a 4-bed, 2-bath on each side. But This one is priced at $640. A lot of competition. It was a beautiful side-by-side, garage in the middle type of place. And it went $20K over asking.
And that's not from like them putting in a higher offer to get concessions back.
No, this was just
from,
win it.
This was from market demand of multiple buyers, right? Right,
because the new loan product.
Yeah. So what was this in quarter one here? Or when was...
Yeah, just quarter one.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
And that's also part of like that. I mean, the market has gotten hotter, you know.
Early spring.
It is early spring, which is the most competitive time. So even, like I said, we see a flip-flop here where right now, you know, we're recording this in March of 2024, and it's not uncommon to have properties with multiple bids coming in. And guess what? Even in that case where they have to go over 20K, the numbers still work. So while they're living there, Jeff, what's their cash flow look like?
Yeah. So this one, they have one vacant unit right now, and the other unit is rented for $2,600. So already pretty good market rents on the other side, right? So really solid suburb of Aurora right there. A nice looking unit. So the vacant unit, they'd move into, add the extra bedroom, get three roommates. And by getting those three roommates, sacrificing their privacy for that basically 1 year, they are going to live for $66 a month to live in their own room on this other side, their own master bedroom. And how amazing that is, because the mortgage on it is 6.75. So it's not like they're getting some type of concession. They had no concessions. They had to go 20K over just to get this deal. And it still works out for them because of the three roommates. Find a way to add that extra bedroom in there makes all the difference. Because if they didn't have that extra bedroom, it would still be a good deal. But now it's really good.
Now it's a great deal.
Yeah, because they're living for free with three roommates. And that shows you the power of, even with a multifamily house hack, there's still creative ways when you combine multiple strategies like rent by room. And in this case, you know, they're dealing with that section market tenant, and then they'll convert that to a Section 8 later. And that's the power of it.
So while they're living there, they're cash flowing negative $66 a month, which is, that's break even.
Yeah.
I mean, negative 100 to positive 100, it's just break even.
And they're paying $3,200 in rent right now. So they're going from $3,200 to negative.
So on their personal balance sheet, they're saving $3,100 a month.
Yes.
Like that's another great point to look at is
personal cash flow.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's a huge move on personal cash flow.
For 24-year-olds.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. Yeah. Wow. Good for them. All right, now after they move out. So they move out.
This is one tenant.
This is one tenant. Okay, great.
So the other, they have 6 months remaining on that lease, the mark 2600. So Section 8, again, over there in Aurora, pays 30, market's 2600. Section 8 is 3255. So you're getting a $600 per month premium times 12, mind you.
And that's for a four-bedroom.
For a four-bedroom.
That's right.
Four-bedroom voucher. So they're going to switch that over. And the day they switch it over, look what it does to their cash flow. This is while they're living there. So now it turns from negative $66 to positive $522 while living there. So now we got a positive cash flowing deal.
Just while you're living there.
Yeah. I mean, you got three roommates on your side, but they're okay with that just because they know, again, they were paying, you know, $3,200 down to basically zero, or call it $3,100 net. And now they're getting paid $522. So now you add that to the $3,200. It's like they just gave themselves a raise of $3,700 a month.
Dude, that's a lot of money every month.
And they're just starting out the careers, both consultants, most like high level careers. And super excited for them.
Dude, they're crushing it.
Yeah.
They are.
All right. Now, what about once they move out?
Yeah. So now they'll just keep it really simple, like two Section 8 tenants, two tenants.
So they won't do rent by room anymore.
Yeah. Just because rent by room at that point is equal, 800 times four is 3,200. Section 8 pays 3,255 for a four bedroom.
Yeah.
So there's no point of having four tenants versus one when they get the guarantee.
I agree.
So you got two Section 8 tenants on each side paying $6,500 rounded up total. And now they're going to have a cash flowing deal of over close to $1,300 a month with that going 20K over just to win the deal. A $1,300 a month cash flow for their first investment property, first house hack.
Jeez, that is just stellar.
Yeah. So they, that was literally about, you know, a few weeks ago. So it wasn't that a few weeks ago in, what is it, like late February. So
that's when they closed on here?
Yeah. Cool. So really recent. And
have they moved in yet already?
Not yet.
Soon?
Soon.
That's always exciting. Cool. Well, we got some questions on here. I want to run by you guys. And they're going to, we'll start doing the fast fire in them. So if you have the cash to put down a bigger down payment, is it better to use that to reduce the mortgage and increase the cash flow, or save cash to scale rental properties over time, or keep it invested in stocks? Again, before we answer this question, we're not your financial advisor, but we'll tell you what we'll do. Jeff.
Yeah, I'm all about maximizing your cash flow, number one. That's why I'm wearing the shirt. But it's always a fine balance, right? Because if you want a deal and you have to put 10% down instead of 5% down to make a cash flow, that's fine. And you have the money for it. It's finding that balance between putting in these particular deals showcase where they have to give up some sacrifices to cash flow, whether because they did low down payments for all of them. So if you want maximum cash flow, usually you got to put more down payment. But if you're willing to give us some privacy and be creative, you could definitely cash flow with lower down payments and you don't have to go as high. But if you want your privacy and you want to still cash flow, then yeah, you're going to have to use some more money to bring it, the mortgage payment down. So it's just finding those levers and pulling the right ones to make it work.
What's your opinion, Troy?
I have a lot of people that like having the cash in the bank and the move on, like we were mentioning earlier, that the $10,000 for the $64, right? So would you prefer to have that money sitting in the bank as a little security blanket if you need it, or the $62? Does that make a difference? So again, that's kind of to our point early on, is doing that evaluation, doing those discussions, and then each property, of course, with its nuances. What kind of rent can it bring in? What's the payment going to look like? What are the taxes? Does it have any HOA or any of that kind of stuff? It's going to move those numbers and drive those numbers. So in some cases where you got a great property, taxes are reasonable, the price point's good, the rents are strong, giving up a little bit on the rate or the, you know, doing a little more financing, a little more leverage can make a lot better sense. Yeah. But like you said, to your point, to get some of the properties work, you got to get really aggressive with the down, or you got to put more money into it to really make it work. But then your return on investment is going to be lessened.
Yes.
So that's why it's
trade-off.
You got to do the homework.
Yeah.
Got to do the homework.
And a great, before you have my opinion, great exercise is when you're using, you know, a spreadsheet or our spreadsheets to analyze these properties, play around with, hey, if I put down a 5% down payment, what's that do to the cash flow of my cash? Okay, bump up to 10%, bump up to 15%, and just run those numbers and you'll get a feel for what's right for you. Now, I did that a lot of times and helped me realize that, hey, I'm a leverage guy. I want to put down as little amount of money as possible.
So you're the tiebreaker.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's where I would go for it. I want as much leverage as possible. You can put down more. You can get really creative. You can do both. But I'm a big fan. I'd rather put down more because more leverage usually gives you a greater return. And then I've got that capital I can go invest into another rental or keep it in stocks. Again, so run them as yourself. But no matter what you do, make sure you're financially disciplined and keep at least 6 months cash in the bank per property. So if this, expenses with everything is, you know, $3,000 a month, 3 times 6 is $18,000. Keep $20,000 in a liquid account, because no matter what you do, cash on hand pays next month's mortgage payment when something goes bad, and something will go bad.
Yes.
That is real estate. And that is why we expect to get higher returns on stock market, because we deal with more stuff. And my stocks don't call me. My tenants do sometimes, right? But great question there. So you got some different opinions, but the best thing to do is go out there and just, as you analyze properties, play with different numbers and see what feels right for your financial situation. Another question here. What is the Section 8 rent calculation?
So go to HUD Fair Market Rents on Google. You'll find exactly the state you're located in. Hopefully it's Colorado. And then this county. And then from there, it gives you the basically a little picture of screenshot of all the rents that Fair market rents that Section 8 will pay out based on bedroom, from a little studio all the way up to a four bedroom. And then think over a four bedroom, they do a 15% multiplier from that four bedroom onward. So five bedroom is 15% multiplied by the four, six bedroom is 15% multiplied by the five. But those ones are pretty rare.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of vouchers for those.
No, it's like a little bell curve of like one, two, three, four, five.
There you go.
For vouchers. Yep. But that's the easy way to find it. And even on your local city or county, they each have their own housing authority, they're called. So Denver is called Denver Housing Authority. Aurora is Aurora Housing Authority. Westminster is not called Westminster Housing Authority. It's called Maker Partners. So you just have to research it. Google's your friend there, and you'll be able to even pull up their payment standards. And it'll most likely match what HUD or Housing Urban Development shows, because that's the housing authorities get their numbers from HUD, because HUD releases it every year on September 30th for the following year.
Fantastic. All right. So I think we have a couple more questions rolling in here, but I want to wrap up with a couple lending guidelines as well, because I know some things have changed. And we also have quite a few investors, as we have surveyed our audience. More of our clients, more of our listeners want more details on scaling, not getting their first house hack, but getting their third or fourth house hack. So Troy, I know there's some new lending updates that we all need to be aware of.
Yeah, the key, and it's nothing earth shattering. There's always been something there, but we just got to be careful. They are pressing down. They want that deposit plus the first month's rent. That's the big thing, and an executed lease. And that's only on the situations, again, whole reason to get things going early on so we can do a good evaluation of your situations. Not always do we need a lease on the departure residence, but most people will, because they're not going to qualify for as much without having that lease agreement on the departure residence in order to offset that payment to qualify for the next house hack.
Yeah. So it might be going from the first one or the next one.
Or ninth.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be the same thing. What's that departure residence look like? So we've had several clients and investors, fourth house hacks, a couple of them come to mind. And we did exactly that. We got that departure residence. It has to be a 12-month lease. A lot of questions always come up. Can I do a short-term, mid-term, or Airbnb? Unfortunately, underwriting guidelines won't allow for that. They want to see the 12-month so they have some solid number to work with and hang their hat on. Subsequently, after the 12 months, you can turn it into an Airbnb or go short-term, mid-term on the rental agreements if that's your desire. But from an underwriting house lending hack standpoint, you need that 12-month lease
executed. Does the lender give 75% of that lease?
Yes, good point for income? Jeff bringing up is that they do discount it to take into consideration vacancy factors and whatnot. They'll discount whatever the face amount of the lease is by 25%. So quick number, $4,000, they'll give you $3,000 credit towards offsetting that payment. And so sometimes it can end up being a little bit of a negative from a qualifying. It adds to your debt to income ratio. So it could be $500-$700 or whatever that we have to account for that's going to affect your buying ability for the next property, which leads into that. Get pre-approved.
Yep. And this, if you're house hacking, you're getting a loan, and, you know, everyone's got to look at properties first. Always get your finances, get your strategy in place first. That's why we're such big opponents. Hey, sit down with us, help you figure out your real estate game plan. Mm-hmm. Sit down with Troy and figure out what your lending game plan is like. Because especially the farther out you start this process, the better. Because like the 5% down multifamily, hey, it changed. They bought their first property sooner. There's a lot of people too. Troy will do all the preliminary credit checks, the background, the income. So I would say, hey, we could do this or pay this off or do this or get this old thing cleaned up, and it's going to have this impact on you.
Yeah, to optimize.
Yeah, and well, like optimizing your credit score is not something you can do over a weekend. It takes some time to do it. So you want to do it before you're going under not the day before you're under contract.
Well, and something we didn't even bring up in some of the slides here is there's fringe benefits to that, because you can move quicker, more efficiently. Jeff can write a shorter contract, especially in a more competitive market. You're going to see a shorter turn time from acceptance to closings might win the deal. You know, if you can accommodate a seller situation, if you can close in 2 or 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. But you can do that because you're pre-approved, and we know we've got everything ready to go. We just need to plug in the property. So stronger pre-approval letter to the seller representing the house, the seller's agent, shorter turn time, stronger phone call we can give to that listing agent to say, hey, We're pre-approved. We're ready to go. We've documented everything. It's just, there's so many wins. It's just silly not to do a full analysis.
That's so well said. All right. Well, like I said, if you guys need help with anything, reach out to us, reach out to Troy. We're here to serve you. And I think we have all the questions answered. If any questions come up that pop your mind later, or for a lot of people to listen to the recording of this, again, don't be shy with reaching out. We are big believers in giving educational content. It helps us network, helps us put together deals, helps our clients put together deals. So any questions you have, reach out to us. Jeff, Troy, thank you guys for taking some time out of your busy schedule. Thank you for getting all the data in the slide deck and making it such a factual presentation for our clients out there. So thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
All right, we're not there. Who is watching and listening? Thank you for coming out. If we can help you out with anything, don't hesitate to reach out. See you soon, everyone.